Stewart versus Villarreal Tamayo.
Good morning. I'm Susan Kister. This was a very troubling plea, and I say that just on the basis of the plea transcript itself and an allocution by the defendant, coupling that with the fact that he was Spanish-speaking, that there was no written plea agreement, which is very troubling in this case. I'm certainly lacking in confidence here that this defendant knew the nature of the charge to which he was pleading. I think if you look at his remarks, it becomes glaringly apparent that he's making every effort to inform the court that he's limiting himself as to what he's pleading guilty to. He keeps saying, I'm pleading guilty to being here without permission. I entered without permission. He says nothing about having entered without permission after having previously been deported on an aggravated felony conviction or as the result of such a conviction. And he says that's it. He said that's what I'm pleading guilty to, and that's it. And it's particularly troubling because nobody in this colloquy says to him, is this your prior?
But the indictment itself charged an aggravated felony as 1996, didn't it?
It does. But this court has said in Ladon, it said again in Fernandez, Your Honor, that that's not necessarily enough. The fact that a defendant sits down with counsel and looks at an indictment does not mean he understands the indictment. And you've got a situation here where this defendant had two attorneys. The first one moved to withdraw because he says in an affidavit to the court that that there's a disagreement with his client as to why the client doesn't understand why he's been charged with anything. And so the first attorney moves
that the district court asked to vacate the plea.
Pardon me?
Did he ask the district court to...
He did not move to withdraw.
Right. So that's the problem. So if he asked the district court would say, I would think, something like, you want to withdraw your plea? I might let you, but then you won't get acceptance of responsibility, and here you may not get the bottom of the accurately calculated guideline range of the sentence. And the defendant might have then said, I don't want that. And that would have been the end of the case.
But none of that happened here.
But isn't that a better procedure to ask the district court to withdraw the plea rather than just take an appeal and come here?
Yes, but I would back it up even before that, Your Honor. I think the better procedure is for the district court judge to say, here's an abstract of judgment. The government is saying that you had this felony conviction in Colorado back in 1996, whatever it was, for substance abuse felony. Was that you? Was that your conviction? That would have been the better procedure. Now, granted, we don't have to follow absolutely Rule 11, but there was not even any remote conversation regarding that prior, which boosts this offense up and, I would argue, changes its character.
But the indictment didn't charge a substance abuse situation. It charged him with possession, that he was convicted of possession of methamphetamine with intent to deliver.
The indictment
didn't. And it was a felony. That's what it charged.
The problem is he never admitted to it. And I don't think you can read that into this transcript, that he ever made any kind of admission to that. And I won't go so far as to call it an element of the crime. I think under current law it's not, but I think he never fully understood the nature of the crime to which he was pleading. I think the nature of this particular offense under 1346 encompasses that prior and the fact that he re-entered after that prior.
Is there really an issue about the accuracy of that 1996 conviction?
I don't know.
What are you doing? So what? If you were right and this went back and there's no question that there's a 1996 conviction, an aggravated felony, you're going to be right back in the same situation.
So. And then we've ascertained that, Judge.
Mm-hmm.
Then we've ascertained that. And I would ask that at the...
But I ask you if there's a legitimate question about the accuracy of that prior conviction. You say, you don't know.
There is. I think it is never proven. As much as
we can... just told me you don't know.
I think as much as we can say with any certainty of any kind is that the U.S. attorney represented that this individual suffered this conviction on this date in the state of Colorado. But there was no proof of it. There was nothing beyond that statement or that representation. And the judge never made a finding on it, and the defendant never made an admission on it.
But even if an explicit finding that finding would relate to sentencing, not to the validity of the guilty plea. So, you know, you've really got a problem, and of course, I think your biggest problem is how you would ever get around the Supreme Court's Almendarez-Torres opinion, which says that the prior aggravated felony conviction isn't a lot of problems.
And I concede that. Clearly, Almendarez-Torres is the state of the law with respect to a finding by the judge at sentencing on the prior conviction. But I think that we still need to back up. I think that there's a purpose to Rule 11, and that's to provide a forum so that a defendant can personally see and interact with the court and vice versa, so that there's some certitude and certainty that he knows what he's pleading guilty to. And I don't think he knew that here. And in fact, when the judge says, and you know there's a 20-year sentence here, it's only a maximum, but you understand I could go up to 20 years, he says, well, why would you be giving me that kind of a sentence? He's even questioning that in his allocution. I think he's confused. I think there's some real ambiguity that he has an understanding as to what he's doing. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Stephen Ingram. I'm an assistant United States attorney from Milwaukee. Your Honors, I respectfully request that this court affirm the district court's acceptance of Mr. Villarreal Tamayo's guilty plea and deny his request to set aside that plea. Your Honors, this case involved a person who pleaded guilty without a plea agreement, but with the assistance of bilingual counsel and an interpreter, to the single charge in the indictment of illegal reentry after deportation following a conviction for an aggravated felony. Your Honors, because this court has in a previous case called Driver in 2001, this court has invited the notion that plain error should not apply in a case such as this where there is no request to withdraw the guilty plea. I would like to just place that expressly before this court and invite you to consider whether that is appropriate.
But wasn't Driver later rejected in U.S. versus Vaughn? Wasn't that dictum in Driver?
It was dictum, right. But I just thought that this seems to be an analogous set of circumstances where we have an attempt to set aside the guilty plea when there was no, that issue was never put before the district court. And so I just wanted to put it out there.
But well, when you go back, though, I think it would behoove the government to take a look at 535 U.S. at 5960 and 59 Note 1. Where the Driver dictum was rejected as being inconsistent with circuit.
Right. Okay, thank you, Judge. I'll take a look at that. Well, then let me get to the main issue then, which is whether Mr. Villarreal Tamayo can show that there was plain error in this case. And I think that the standard is whether the record as a whole would indicate that but for any error that was made, if Mr. Villarreal Tamayo would have decided to go ahead and plead guilty. And the record as a whole shows that he did, in fact, admit this prior that was already discussed when Ms. Kister was speaking. And
what did he say, please, that you're referring to?
Your Honor, he didn't say anything necessarily about it at the plea other than acquiescing to the fact that it was put out there both in the indictment as well as in the factual proffer that I made. But in the period between the plea and the sentencing, Mr. Villarreal Tamayo did file a pro se document which took issue with the proposed sentence in the pre-sentence report on double jeopardy grounds. And it was a necessary part of that argument, that double jeopardy argument that Mr. Villarreal Tamayo made, that he had indeed been convicted of this offense. And indeed, his pro se filing, the very first part of it is a factual background, and the factual background expressly refers to this prior conviction that he had. So not only did he not contest it in a motion to withdraw his plea, but in contesting the proposed sentence in the pre-sentence report, he explicitly admitted it. So there's really no question about Mr. Villarreal Tamayo's acknowledgement.
How did he admit that it was going to be taken into consideration, that was a possibility?
The nature, as I understood it, Your Honor, of his pro se objection to the calculations in the pre-sentence report, there's a 16-point enhancement if you've been convicted of an aggravated felony. And so in his pro se filing, what he was saying was, I think it's wrong.
What's this language that you're referring to in the pro se filing?
Point 2 of his factual background, Your Honor, reads as follows. The defendant objects to paragraph 2-14 specific offense characteristic. Pursuant to USSG section 2L1.2 sub B sub 1 sub A sub I, if the defendant has a conviction for a drug trafficking which exceeded 13 months, increased by 16 levels, and then here's the pertinent language, paragraph 3, on 1/5/96, Mr. Villarreal Tamayo was convicted in U.S. District Court in Denver, Colorado, case number 95-CR-107, for the felony offense of possession with intent to distribute more than 1 kilogram of methamphetamine, and was sentenced to 70 months incarceration. Therefore, a 16-level increase is warranted. And then he goes on. It says the defendant served that in italics. The defendant served his 70-month sentence and was released on 12/5/00. The defendant paid his debt to the society. That in Mr. Villarreal Tamayo's filing. So his whole double jeopardy argument was based on the idea that he had indeed been charged, convicted, and he served his sentence. So I think any notion that he didn't admit it is the ground is cut out from under such an argument. And then, Your Honor, just briefly, various other places, it is clear from the record, again, viewing the record as a whole, that Mr. Villarreal Tamayo was very aware of what it was he was charged with and what he was pleading to. The charge was made clear both at his initial appearance on the complaint and at the arraignment and plea where he was provided with a copy of his indictment. At the plea hearing, the fact that this was the charge in the indictment was discussed numerous times. When the district court gave the elements for the indicted charge, when the government gave the facts that would support the charge and also included the prior, even though it wasn't an element in its factual proffer, the defendant didn't object to the government's inclusion of the prior in the factual statement. The district court gave the maximum penalties for the indicted offense, not the lesser included offense, that is 20 years. The defendant didn't object when the district court did that. The district court asked the defendant expressly if he wanted to plead guilty to the charge in the indictment, and the defendant said yes. The defendant knew to speak up for himself. If he didn't understand, he did it often. He often interrupted the proceedings and put in his words. So he wasn't just sitting there as a potted plant, allowing the government to sort of steamroll over him. Counsel indicated during the change of plea hearing that he and his client had discussed penalties and elements. Again, so from counsel, you have the idea that defendant knew what was going on. Then, as I indicated, Your Honors, between plea and sentencing, this important pro se filing was made wherein he admitted his prior. And then at sentencing, he pressed his double jeopardy argument, which again necessarily admitted the prior. He did not object to the inclusion of the prior in the pre-sentence report, and he argued in mitigation that the prior was stale, admitting the prior by doing that. So taking the record as a whole, it's clear that the defendant knew about the prior. He knew that it involved the charge that he was pleading guilty to, and he admitted the prior itself. So unless you have any other questions, I'll rest on my brief.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Very briefly, in referring to this pro se filing by Mr. Villarreal Tamayo, which is an objection to PSR, if the court examines it and it's part of the record, the court will see that all he does is fill in his name. This is a boilerplate motion. It's clearly been written by somebody else. I don't know where it came from or what its genesis is. I do know, as I'm sure the court well knows, that during this period, after Blakely, after Apprendi, prior to Booker, after Booker, there was a flurry of filings, and every jailhouse lawyer between here and Kingdom Come was filing what they thought would help their buddies in jail and in prison to attack a PSR. And in my experience, this is another one of those. It's clearly not written by a Spanish-speaking individual of limited educational background, and I would submit that we'd be very, very careful in assuming this as an admission of his prior. I don't think we can read it that way. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gister. And Mr. Ingram, we'll take the case under advisement.